Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. In this podcast, we'll explore trends, issues, and events surrounding Lutheran education. In each episode, we'll invite educational experts to shed light on topics that support educators, administrators, and staff. Thank you for listening to LSEM's Lutheran Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. My name is Richard Schumacher. I'm the Director of Programs and Services for LSEM. And today we're going to be talking about classroom accommodations and modifications, how to help your students in the classroom who may be struggling with learning needs through assistance in accommodating or modifying the workload. And to help us discuss this today, we'll be joined by Kara Bratton. Kara is the Resource Center Director for Lutheran Special Education Ministries and has a number of years of experience in helping schools and teachers to make such accommodations. Kara, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Rich. Thank you.
All right, so Kara, why don't we start off with just a real simple define for us, what are accommodations and modifications?
So accommodations and modifications are actually two separate things that a lot of times get interchanged and confused. The simplest way I remember it is to think of it as accommodations are not changing the content that students are required to know. It's just changing the way they might express that knowledge. But if you're thinking of grade level standards, accommodations would meet those same standards. It just might be a different way for a child to meet that standard. For instance, a social studies textbook, rather than the student reading it themselves, maybe they're having an e-reader or, you know, books on tape, that kind of thing. That's an accommodation because they're still receiving and responsible for the same content. A modification is for maybe more severe students who would not be able to handle that same content, and the content has to be modified. So if you're giving a math assessment and all of the word problems are removed for that student because they just don't understand that, they're not at that level yet, that would be a modification because they're not responsible for the same grade level content as their peers.
So if a teacher were to be hesitant or reluctant to make accommodations based on a desire to not, quote unquote, dumb down the curriculum, your answer to that would be what?
Would be, just like I said, you know, you're not dumbing down the curriculum with accommodations because you're still just providing a different way for them to access the same content. So even if you're looking ahead to a state assessment or something like that, where teachers want to make sure that each student is exposed to that content, my response is, well, they are still going to be exposed to that content. It could just be in a different way. So they're going to learn the same things, but just in a different way than the other students do, as opposed to modifying, which would be they're not responsible. They're learning different content or more limited content.
Okay. So tell me, Kara, does a student who receives accommodations or modifications to their work, do they have to have a diagnosed learning disability to qualify for these?
So in answering that question, I'm just going to give the caveat of I'm speaking for how it works in our Lutheran system, okay. Which could be very, very different from the public education system, which is not my area of expertise.
Sure.
But in the Lutheran system, no, the student would not have to have any kind of diagnosed disability, I would say, especially for accommodations. I like to think of it, accommodations are kind of like giving a child a pair of glasses. Where, yes, you establish the need, a doctor's going to establish the need that, hey, that child is having trouble seeing, I'm going to give them a pair of glasses. Now, modifying, I would say, just from my experience, my perspective, I would not modify content unless there, one, is a diagnosis or two, you're just noticing that accommodations without changing the content are just not working for the student. So I definitely don't think, again, diagnoses are needed for accommodations. I would be a little more hesitant with modifying content without some kind of diagnosis or without exhausting everything in your toolbox with accommodations before getting to that point.
Would accommodations then be an appropriate thing for a teacher to use during the RTI process as they're trying to determine if a student should go in for more testing?
Absolutely. And I think that that's one of the reasons that, you know, RTI has been so big and that push for classroom teachers to try more things before students are go down the pipeline for testing, or even before they work with a resource teacher or special ed teacher, whereas the resource teacher can, you know, provide suggestions for accommodations. But it, again, allows that child to be successful in the classroom with just sometimes some simple little tools that maybe a teacher has not thought of before, but could really, again, allow that child to access the same content as their peers.
Is there a certain age level that accommodations and modifications are more appropriate for? Can a student be too young to receive modifications or accommodations? Or when you get into, say, high school, is that too late for students to benefit from those?
I think it's ever too early or too late for either one. But again, especially accommodations, if I can go back to my analogy of a child wearing glasses, you know, I have a niece that started wearing glasses when she was 2 years old. That's what she needed at that point. And when she started wearing glasses, she can see, her eyes now converge correctly. But you know, just like that in a classroom, if a child's in preschool and they're showing you, hey, I'm not being successful with this, there's nothing wrong with, okay, let's find a way for them to be successful. That's really all accommodations are. Again, modifying content might not happen as much at the preschool level, but there again depends on the individual student and how severe their needs are or how successful other things have been. Likewise, the same thing in high school. I wouldn't say to a high school student, well, sorry, you're 15, 16 years old. I'm going to take your glasses away now because you should be able to see without them. To me, that just sounds ridiculous. But I also think you could compare that to accommodations. Well, yes, the goal maybe is by the time they're in college and later on, maybe they don't need as many accommodations. But you also just don't yank them away just because, well, they're a teenager now or they're going on to college. They shouldn't need those. I'm all about meet the child where they are and what their needs are, what they're showing you they can be successful at and what they still struggle with, rather than have these make hard and fast decisions based just on their age.
We're talking with Kara Bratton, Resource Center Director for Lutheran Special Education Ministries on the Lutheran Education Podcast. Kara, looking at accommodations and modifications and the development of them, allow me to just ask you, talk about the documentation in general that goes along with this. I mean, these are things that, especially when you've got the diagnosis and you're looking into the more significant modifications, you probably have to have a fairly good documentation trail to account for why you're doing the things you're going to be doing and what things you're going to be doing. How does that process work? How should those accommodations be documented for student and for parent use?
So I don't think there's necessarily one right or wrong way to document, other than I firmly believe that it would be wrong to just not document at all. And to give you an example of that, we see a lot of kids in our maybe K-8 traditional kind of Lutheran schools, and the teachers are just, they're excellent teachers, and they just kind of are adjusting to what kids need, and they just kind of automatically think, oh, okay, I see this child struggling. I'm just going to do this because I know that's going to work.
Sure.
And those are all great things, but then they don't really think about, okay, I'm really doing all this for student X. Well, then when student X goes into high school and the high school teachers don't know what the eighth grade teachers, what the seventh grade teachers have done, then it makes it really difficult for that child to be as successful. And I don't think teachers, you know, have that intention of not documenting, but what happens is then as the child moves from school to school, from grade to grade, if it's not documented, then teachers struggle for those first couple months of school to figure out, how did that child get an A? How were they so successful the previous year? And all that really does is it frustrates the teacher, frustrates the child, frustrates parents. So my recommendation, and LSEM has some great simple resources for this. If you're ever interested and want to contact us, we'd be happy to send those over to you. Even just a simple checklist that, again, you're a teacher, you've got 20 million things to do, but maybe at the end of the day, the end of the week, the end of the quarter, if you just have a simple checklist to go through for the students, you know you're making accommodations, but maybe not tracking them as specifically as you would like to or it would be needed. You can just go through, keep this checklist in the child's file, and just go through and check off what you're doing. I would also recommend putting a date by it if you can or if you can remember. Okay, I think I started this accommodation about second quarter, just so, again, it keeps that paper trail. It keeps a running record of what you have done. Then my other recommendation would be, you know, you might say, okay, you know, I tried reading the tests out loud to the student. We put that into effect, say, November 1st. So I, you know, check that on my list. I put November 1st. And if I see that that really didn't make any difference for the student, so I stopped doing it, make a note of that on the checklist too. It's just as important to know what doesn't work as it is to know what does work. And so that's more for the accommodation side. The modification, again, I think is way more critical just because you are modifying content. So that typically is when students might have a more formal diagnosis. So hopefully there would be documentation in place for those students regardless. If the public school is coming in and writing the service plan, then those modifications could be part of that. But there again, just keeping some kind of checklist, even if you just have a couple minutes to write down on a piece of paper and stick it in the child's file what you're doing. The other thing I think is critical there is informing parents. I think, you know, again, parents by and large are all for doing what works well for the child, and they support the teacher in doing that. They want the teacher to do that. But if parents don't know that something is being, you know, accommodated in the classroom or you know, more intensely modified, then again, student moves from grade to grade, school to school, and the parents don't realize how much support they were actually getting in the previous class to maintain those grades or, you know, maintain that level of knowledge. So I think it's important to keep parents and everybody in the loop regarding what's being done too in the classroom to help the children be successful.
Sure. So now one of the myths or things that you oftentimes hear about students with modified grades is that the students cannot fail. It's impossible for them to be able to fail because they have that modification. Is that true or is that more of a myth?
So in my opinion, again, I believe that's really a myth. Just like on the other side that I've also heard people say, well, if they're getting accommodations or modifications, they shouldn't be earning A's. Mm-hmm. So either end of the spectrum, I disagree with. I feel like, again, you grade or, you know, you put on the spectrum, you know, what the child is producing with accommodations, with modifications, just like you would for the other students. So again, if a child is getting the accommodation of dictating their essay responses, okay, if they dictate their response and the response doesn't meet your rubric, it doesn't meet your criteria, you grade it just like you would if the student wrote the essay question. And if that means the student, you know, quote unquote, failed that essay test or that essay question, then that's the case. On the other side, if the student dictated a response that, you know, included every single detail you'd be looking for, just like they would have handwritten it, then they should earn that A. So the accommodations and modifications shouldn't really alter what grade they earn. But I will say, it's LSEM's perspective that that should be noted on a report card. Again, to say that, okay, the student got an A in fifth grade history, and if there's no notation that, you know what, they got an A, but it was highly accommodated with, again, maybe dictated responses, you know, listening to the books through their iPad, things like that, then it looks like the child can achieve an A without accommodations, just like any sure. other student in the classroom. So that's our recommendation, is that it is somehow noted with an asterisk or something on a progress report or a report card, just to alert others, again, changing schools, going from grade to grade, that accommodations and modifications are needed for that student to achieve that level.
So, Kara, what you're saying is that some students might be graded differently than other students, and how would you then respond to someone who might say that's not fair?
So in response to the fairness question, I do use that glasses example quite a bit, and I'll come back to that again for a second. You know, I will say, okay, if I'm a second grade teacher, I'm not going to stand at the door and hand out glasses to every student to say, hey, you know what? A couple of you need glasses, so you're all going to wear glasses. That's not going to help all students, obviously. But then in the same light, if I stand at the door and take away glasses from every student, well, that's not going to help the students that need glasses in order to see the blackboard. So that's one example of, again, just that idea of fairness does not mean equality. It does not mean everybody gets the same thing. Everybody needs the same thing. The other example of that I use quite often is if I go into a doctor's office and if I go in with a broken leg, I'm not going to expect the same treatment as the patient before me who went into the doctor's office with a fever. If the doctor treats us exactly the same, I'm going to find a new doctor. I'm going to say, well, why did you spend all that time in medical school if you prescribe the same thing regardless of the symptoms? So students in the classroom are really the same thing. And again, you as the teacher have those tools to treat each child differently based on kind of the symptoms or based on the struggles that they're showing you. So again, if a student is showing you that they need help with something, think of it as like, okay, this is like me going into the doctor's office. I want the doctor to listen to my symptoms, to respond accordingly. And if I'm going to be treated the same as the person who came in before me, well, that's not really going to help my symptoms. So again, teachers really have that power to be like the doctor in their classroom.
You're listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. We'll be back with our discussion on accommodations and modifications with Kara Bratton after this.
Lutheran Special Education Ministries is an organization committed to serving schools, churches, and families to advance the success of children who have learning needs. Our commitment to this mission began with the opening of the Lutheran School for the Deaf in Detroit. Over the years, our ministry has expanded, and today LSEM is proud to serve in Lutheran schools across the country. But as our ministry has grown, our commitment to helping students succeed academically in an environment where they can also grow spiritually is as strong as ever. So if your church or school is looking for professional development for your faculty, information to share with struggling families, or for a ministry partner to support an existing resource room or start a new one, LSEM is ready to help you meet your specialized learning goals. For more information about how LSEM can help you build brighter futures for your students, please contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. That's www.luthsped.org.
Welcome back to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. We're talking again today with Kara Bratton, the Resource Center Director for Lutheran Special Education Ministries, and our topic is classroom accommodations and modifications. So, Kara, let me ask you, who should be involved in the creation of accommodations and modifications? Obviously, the classroom teacher should be involved in this, but who else should take a role in creating these?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I really believe parents should, if not have a role in deciding accommodations and modifications, they should at least be part of the process, part of the conversation to understand what accommodations are being made for their child in the classroom. Again, that just creates that team approach. It also allows parents to implement things at home that maybe the teacher has found to be successful. I also think that as students get older, like I said earlier, that doesn't mean that their need for accommodations goes down, but I do believe that they should be involved in that process as they get older too, to give feedback, to say, you know what, this I have found on my own that this really works well for me. A lot of times kids that struggle kind of figure out their own coping mechanisms that sometimes might take a teacher months of trial and error to figure out. So I think a lot of times involving the student and just saying, hey, you know, is this helpful to you, or what would be more helpful to you? By the same token, you know, those students might identify things that are not very helpful to them. And so I think involving them in the process is very good. And if I could go back to the parent side for just a second, as I mentioned earlier with, you know, keeping track of things on a checklist and accommodations, modifications, the other thing I always try to tell teachers is if you have this big, long checklist of accommodations in the classroom and you're kind of checking off things as you go, my recommendation would be to not show that huge, long checklist to parents. Because typically what happens is if you have a long checklist and you've checked off maybe five options on there, but maybe there's 50 things on that page, you don't want the parent to say, oh, well, I want my child to have this, 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 and this, just because they see it on the page as an option. So I would recommend, again, keep that checklist for yourself. But then when it comes to what modifications, what accommodations you're actually doing, maybe type that up on a separate piece of paper or a separate form when you're sitting down to talk to the parents about what you've done and what is successful with the child. And one last thing regarding that topic, too, I would say if it's a child that, again, is part of the RTI process that you're making accommodations for, and you're looking to think, okay, maybe this child is going to need testing from the public school or a private psychologist, that kind of thing, there again, there might be some requirements in terms of who to involve in that conversation, because it might be appropriate at some point, depending on your district, to involve the public school in that discussion so that they see what you've already done, what accommodations, what modifications are being done to help that child be successful. And they might also have some other ideas about things you as the teacher haven't thought of or the parents haven't thought of.
So when you involve the parents, there that opens up a door to different ideas and different thoughts, and you had given the advice of kind of keeping that checklist private and not giving it as a blank menu, if you will, for the parents. How do you recommend that teachers work with the parents, especially when there might be some disagreement in the levels of modification, or if when homework goes home, for example, the parents are perhaps over-modifying or over-accommodating?
Well, so I think there's that fine line, too, between involving the parents and presenting it for a discussion versus, okay, you as the teacher are just going to do whatever the parents say. So I think there's that line of, you know, you're the authority, at least in your classroom. You can't always control what's going to happen at home.
Sure.
But I think presenting it as, this is what we're going to do in the classroom. And if parents have other ideas, some you might think, hey, you know what, this is worth trying. If it's something you've already tried and maybe the parents don't realize that, you could say, well, you know what, I did try that already and this was the result. It didn't work so well. And if on the other hand, you have not tried that, then in the back of your head, you're thinking, that's really not going to work. Maybe you could say to the parent, you know what, I'll think about trying this for a week and see if, see if that changes anything. So, you know, I think it's easy to assume that something is not going to work or it is going to work because in our minds, okay, that just doesn't seem logical. But sometimes just kind of feeling like, okay, maybe I'm just going to humor the parent, that can sometimes turn into some really good ideas that you wouldn't have thought. So I think there's that fine line of not letting the parents run all over you. And if they come with a laundry list of 10 to 15 things they want you to try, you can emphasize with them, you know what, I can't try all 10 to 15 of these things at once, because if I do, then I'm not really going to know which thing made the difference. So you could kind of tailor that and, you know, say, but I am willing to try this one thing or these two things. Let's try and see if those make a difference rather than trying them all at once.
So another opportunity for the teacher to practice their diplomacy while at the same time sharing the truth in love.
Yes, I mean, that's my perspective. I know it doesn't necessarily work that easily in every case, but that's where I would start.
Sure. So you've put the accommodation in place. How long should a teacher attempt that accommodation and then come back to assess it to determine if it's effective?
I wish there was an easy answer on that. But I would say, you know, don't discount anything after, you know, less than a couple of weeks. The other component of that is sometimes, for instance, I used the example earlier of a student dictating responses for like an essay question or a longer writing assignment. Well, I could maybe say, okay, I'm going to try this for 2 weeks. But if during that 2-week cycle, there's only one opportunity for the student to dictate the response, then that's going to be, you know, that's not going to be enough to make a judgment on whether that accommodation worked or not. So I also think you have to think of the number of opportunities that would present to use that accommodation before you really think of a timeline. But I think, in my experience, if it's an accommodation, like, again, books being read out loud or read through the iPad to a student, there are probably going to be a lot of opportunities for a student to use that accommodation. So if you as the teacher are allowing that accommodation to be used consistently, like it should be, then I would say if within a couple weeks you don't notice a difference one way or the other, then that might be a fair amount of time to judge whether it worked or not. And sometimes, too, it's a matter of asking the student, even if you don't notice it's made a difference, maybe asking the student, hey, you know, does it make it easier for you to listen to the book on tape? And if the student says, yes, it really does help me listening through the iPad, then maybe it's worth doing it for a little bit longer.
And how many accommodations do you think is too many accommodations? Is there a number that, all right, we're just over accommodating and making it more difficult than helpful?
I don't necessarily think there's a set number of total accommodations. I think, one, it's about what's enabling that child to be successful. And for some students, that could be 10, 15 different accommodations, because it could be different accommodations during math and different accommodations during reading. Then you might have another student that, again, only needs 1 to 2 things. I will say, if you're starting out where the student has had no accommodations, you might want to only introduce a couple at a time rather than, like I mentioned with the parents, introducing 10 accommodations all at once is going to be very difficult for you to gauge, okay, what is actually helping the child be successful, mm-hmm. and or am I doing too much? So if you introduce too many things at once, you're not going to know what works and what doesn't work. I do think, too, I see a lot of our high school teachers, or if the school is running kind of a study hall or some kind of resource program in high school, I do see a lot of high school teachers, again, trying to win students off accommodations. And I think that that's always a good goal to have in mind too, is thinking, okay, you know what, in the future and even college, you know, accommodations might not be as readily available. But like I said earlier too, let's counter that with, okay, if we take away too much and they start not being successful, then we might need to reinstate some. But I do think the goal is, especially with accommodations, provide what they need, but then ultimately, if we can scale back on some of those as the child progresses from year to year, and as their underlying skills that you're working on hopefully progress as well, you know, trying to see, okay, maybe next year, maybe they don't need this accommodation. So trying it without too after an appropriate amount of time.
All right. So Kara, a teacher's listening to this podcast and they're looking for more information or perhaps some guidance about making accommodations and modifications. How can they get a hold of you to get some of their questions answered?
So the easiest way would just be through email. My email is K Bratton. That's K B as in boy, R A T T O N @LUTHSPED.org. So kbratton @luthsped.org. Or just check our website, luthsped.org, and then there's a way to contact us through there, and that email will find its way to me and I can respond. Also, we're on Facebook and Twitter, and our national office phone number is 248-419-3390, and someone there could put a call through to the appropriate person to answer any questions as well.
All right, Kara, thank you so very much for your time and your insights into accommodations and modifications, and thank you for listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. To hear future episodes, please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. For more information on this episode's topic or any other questions regarding Lutheran education or Lutheran Special Education Ministries, please feel free to contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Savior.